Blog Talk.
Hello, welcome to Inside Scoop Live. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm your host, Juanita Watson, and I will be talking with author Carrie Stark Hugis. She has come here to the program to talk about her new book, Crossing 13, Memoir of a Father's Suicide. This is a very powerful coming-of-age story about a 13-year-old girl whose life is instantly altered upon finding her father dead from suicide. Through each emotional struggle, the reader shares her journey of complicated grief in the aftermath of a sudden loss. This story gives deep insight into what it takes for a teenager to survive the self-inflicted death of a parent and the compassion to understand and support them. So Carrie Stark Hugis holds a BA in Public Relations from Fort Lewis College in Durango, Colorado, and has 18 years' experience in the marketing and community relations field. She lives with her husband, two children, and furry friend in Highlands Ranch, and is a professional speaker on the topics of understanding and comforting a child survivor of suicide and helping adolescents with sudden loss. As a child survivor herself, she now shares her story with others to help break down the societal stigmas related to suicide and its survivors. So I'm just so happy to be able to have a conversation with Carrie today. Welcome to Inside Scoop Live, Carrie.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, yes, for sure. Well, I have to say congratulations on your book. I just found out that you have become a recent bestseller in the Denver area.
Yes, I have. Crossing 13, Memoir of a Father's Suicide is number 5 as a local bestseller, and I'm just so pleased. And the timing really couldn't be any better because September is National Suicide Prevention Awareness Month.
Oh.
So I'm very pleased that my story is a bestseller and that we are bringing more awareness in, locally in Denver, Colorado, and nationally.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're very involved in the Colorado area, in Denver specifically, with all of the lectures that you're doing. And I also understand that your lecture series was just picked up by Regis University?
Absolutely. I do a lecture series. I don't charge for it. It is to generate awareness about suicide, specifically for children. Children grieve a lot differently than adults do. And so my lecture series is identifying the behaviors and the emotional responses that children have when they're going through the grieving process, and specifically the grieving process for a suicide.
How long have you been involved with suicide prevention?
Well, pretty active, about 3 years now. I started writing my book. It really took a while. It took about 7 years for me to complete my book, mainly because I had to work through my own healing process, and I wanted to get to the point where I was able to talk to others and be at a place where I didn't feel any defensiveness or when I was as a child, a lot of the emotions I had to get over were embarrassment and shame, and I wanted to make sure that I was in a place where I would just be so open that anybody could ask me anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so, especially working with children and other parents. So I would write a bit of my story, and then I would have to put it aside for a few months and then come back to it. And I really felt that I was in a good emotional place to start working with children in suicide prevention about 3 years ago. So it took me a little while.
It's amazing that, you know, so many years after that you would still be going through your healing journey, and this book was a huge part of it. It sounds like almost a closure.
You know, I think that's a very good way to put it. It really started out more as a journal for me, and after I wrote it, I thought, you know, I wonder if my story might help others. And it is written in the voice of a 13-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started to talk to other suicide prevention organizations, and a few of them did read my manuscript, and they said, you know, we just don't really have anything like this out in the market that's written in the voice
mm-hmm.
of a young person that's identifying with the emotions and their journey of pain, basically. And so I had a lot of encouragement to turn it into a book. And so the first part of the book is my story, and then the second half of the book are some self-help tips
mm-hmm.
on grieving and the do's and don'ts of comforting a survivor of suicide. And then I also have resources on where to go.
Yeah, this is a lot packed into this little book.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the book is 102 pages, and it's short, and it's intentionally short because, one, it is a heavy topic, and two, the attention span for somebody who's going through the grief process is pretty limited.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted the chapters to be impactful but short, so they could absorb as much as possible in just a few pages.
Mm-hmm.
Although the book is not limited to just people who are grieving from suicide, I think that it's a great story for the general public to learn about somebody who is going through this process. Suicide impacts all of us. It touches all of us. One of the things I recently learned in Colorado is we are the 7th leading state for suicide. More people die by suicide in Colorado than car accidents.
Is that right?
Yes. And so
any idea why that is?
We don't know why, and that's part of the research. Suicidologists are really looking into that. But suicide is nationally also one of the leading causes of death. So,
is it on the rise?
All of us.
Is it on the rise?
It is,
mm-hmm.
and the more that we can talk about suicide and use the term of suicide, and not hide behind our doors of stigma and shame, the better we are as a nation. Suicide is a mental health issue, and 98% of people who die by suicide, if they receive the mental health treatment, it probably could be prevented.
Mm.
And the first place is just to talk about it,
mm-hmm.
to be open about how we're feeling and to be open about our mental health and that we are absorbed with pain and we may be thinking of suicide.
I guess that's probably part of the stigma, because no one really wants to admit that they are in that much pain or that they're having, you know, personal issues to that extent.
Absolutely. And the number one market or age group, I guess, that do die by suicide are men between the ages of 24 and 44, and my father was in that group. He was 38 when he died.
That's so young.
And many men do not get the mental health therapy that they need.
Mm-hmm.
And women are the second group, the largest group of attempters, but men between 24 and 44 are the largest group that complete suicide.
Oh, that's interesting.
And I just think that the more that we can talk about our stories openly and share them, we can learn from each other. And my father was a wonderful person. And the other reason I wanted to write the story is I'd always felt that his life was defined by his death. And he was extremely handsome. I used to always, people would always say that he looked a lot like the actor, Burt Reynolds,
mm-hmm.
and he had the same type of laugh and a great sense of humor. He was a very wonderful father, and he wasn't the type of father that many people would think, well, your father died by suicide, he must have been abusive, or he must have had an alcoholic problem or a drug problem, and he really didn't. He was an overachiever. He was sort of a type A personality and wanted to be successful in business and in his life, and he was very giving and just a wonderful, wonderful human being. So that was the other reason I wanted to write my story, too, is sort of to honor my father and honor his life.
Mm-hmm. So partially as a legacy to your father. That's beautiful. It must have been a total shock then. If there was no suspicion of this, you know, I imagine that you would go back at some point and be sort of thinking about, were there any warning signs? Could I have seen something?
And, you know, that's such a good question. I think the number one question of all people who've been touched by suicide is why.
Mm-hmm.
And they're often blindsided. They don't see it coming. In my personal case and with our family, it was the same for us. We did not see the suicide coming from my father. I think looking back now, we could say, yes, there were certain things that were different, that his behavior had changed a little bit a few weeks prior to his death. There were some situational things that may have impacted his decision to complete suicide. We were going through some financial problems that we didn't know about till after my father's death. My mother and my father had separated. His father had died a few years earlier by cancer. So there were some painful situations in my father's life, but nobody would have thought that he would have completed suicide.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Do you find that is typical with people that you talk to?
You know, I really do. I think most people, when I've been in support groups, it's the number one theme that they just didn't see it coming. They
mm-hmm.
didn't. You would think that it would be the typical person who's every day saying, "I don't want to be here anymore," and of course there are some of those cases, but in general, it's really the other, where it's just somebody that you just didn't see it coming at all.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes you find out afterwards that there may have been some situations that were in their life that were causing them some pain. But, again, even those situations, you would never contribute that to they were going to take their life.
Take their life. I read somewhere, either in your book or somewhere, that a lot of times the people that actually go through with suicide and end their life, it's not that they are necessarily wanting to end their life. They're just wanting to end the pain.
Absolutely. The studies that they've done are through people who have attempted suicide. So in talking with them after, the number one reason was to end the pain. When they asked them, "Did you want to die?" I think it's 98% of them said no.
Mm.
"I did not want to die. I just wanted to end the pain." So it's a coping mechanism
mm.
for them.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as the mental health field, they're still trying to study why that individual would go to that coping mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
To relieve the pain. And another reason why I wanted to write my book, Crossing 13, is because, as I mentioned, children do grieve differently than adults do.
Yes.
Oftentimes they may not demonstrate the emotions that adults do because they're not capable. Their cognitive development isn't quite there, and they may be overwhelmed by all their emotions. When I became an adult, I heard the term complicated grief, and that was exactly what was happening to me as a child. I just had all these emotions that were hitting me at once that I just shut down.
Mm.
And if you don't go through, if a child does not resolve and go through the grieving process, when they become an adult, then studies have shown that they can have problems with intimate relationships. They can have problems with alcohol, drug abuse, and they often have an 80% greater chance of coping by attempting suicide.
Is that right?
So it's very important that we address this issue with our children, that we help them through the grief cycle, And many times it may take years because if, depending on the age of the child and the development of the child, they're still trying to understand their everyday emotions.
Right.
Because they don't have the emotional intelligence that an adult does. So oftentimes it may take years. And I know in my personal journey of healing that my counselor had told me, my grief counselor, that I would just write down, my subconscious would write down everything that I needed to do to go through the grieving process with my father, and I would put it on a piece of paper and put it in my back pocket. And when I was ready, emotionally ready, I would go through every single one of those grief tasks that I needed to go through. And the counselor was absolutely right. And this has gone through much of my life, my 20s and into my 30s, times when I thought, okay, I think I've got a pretty good handle on it, and then something else would creep up in my life, and I would think, oh, wow, there it is.
There's
another cycle of grief that I need to work through.
Yeah, yeah, so many layers. And I imagine that the potential for post-traumatic stress type of symptoms would really be high in a situation like this.
You know, that's a very good question because I did find my father, and my father died on October 13th, 1979. And so I find if the weather mirrors that fall, we had sort of we call it an Indian summer. And I still do live in Colorado. My father died in Colorado. If the weather mirrors that same season, I do find that it hits me. And I get the senses of the day, the smells of the day, and it's been over 30 years, and it can still hit me if the season mirrors that day.
And you had quite a bit of therapy and counseling through your whole process, so it really goes to show that it is so important to have children process this type of pain because, I mean, it would be incredibly detrimental for the rest of their life if they didn't.
And, you know, everybody, grief is individual. It is so individual. And some people may take longer, some people may take shorter periods of time to go through the grief process. The number one thing you would never want to say to somebody is, aren't you over this yet? I think oftentimes we think, oh, gosh, that happened, you know, 10 years ago or 20 years ago, and it is what it is, and it takes as long as it takes. And as you said, there's that post-traumatic stress process that may happen. I think milestones, I know in my life when I got married, that was another grief process I had to go through, who was going to walk me down the aisle.
Oh, yeah.
After my children were born, I went through the process of being angry at my father because he wasn't here to see his grandchildren. So you have these different milestones that happen in your life that there is this loved one that's not there. Also with the grief, what is your relationship with the person who has died? And that can impact your individual grief process. So you never want to say the words to somebody, you know, aren't you over this yet? Or I understand how you feel, because you really don't understand another person's grief because it is so individual. The best thing is to really just be there with them, listen to them, ask about their loved one. The thing about somebody who dies by suicide, I felt that a lot of people just didn't even want to know about my father. And he was an incredible person, and I love talking about my father. And I have some really great memories of him. And most people, when a loved one does die, whether it's by cancer or an accident or by suicide, you want to remember them. And so I would always encourage people, especially if the loved one died by suicide, to ask that person about their loved one and to help them, you know, honor and keep those loving memories that they had of them in life.
Mm-hmm. That's a great, great point to remember.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Whether you've already written your manuscript or are contemplating writing one, you will need to create a book proposal. ReaderViews has a coaching service to help you create an enticing book proposal for your work of fiction or nonfiction. In fact, ReaderViews will even submit your book proposal to publishers and agents they have created a relationship with, and then they promise to pursue these submissions. Go to ReaderViews.com today and click on Services for Authors to find out more information on book proposals and how ReaderViews can help you. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Just to remind you, I'm talking today with Carrie Stark-Hugis. She is the author of Crossing 13, Memoir of a Father's Suicide. And you can find out more about Carrie and her book through her website, affirmpublications.com. You know, the emotional roller coaster that you would have gone through as a 13-year-old, can you kind of outline the emotions that you went through that would be typical for a teenager going through this kind of an experience?
Well, again, as I said, it is individual mm-hmm. to each person. What I can tell you is that teens, they definitely understand death. They do understand the finality of death. They may act out. And they may have problems with processing or remembering. At that time, school is their job. So I know through my 7th and 8th grade years, it was very hard for me to learn and to remember things and to process things. I can tell you when you're entering into 7th grade, it's such an important time. Everybody wants to look, act, talk the exact same way.
Right.
If you remember what 7th grade was
yes,
like.
Yes, yes, yes.
And in my day, you know, we all wore the exact pairs of, you know, the button-up Levi jeans. We all wore the Izod shirts with the turned-up collars. So if you have anything that makes you different, that can produce feelings of embarrassment. And that was one of my first emotions that I had when my father died, is I had just entered into 7th grade, and I was trying to fit in with the rest of the population, the rest of the kids. And this was something that made me different. Mm. It was the death of a parent,
mm-hmm.
not to mention that it was a suicide, which made me even more different. And so one of my first emotions was embarrassment, and then, of course, the guilt, because I felt guilty that I was embarrassed and, you know,
mm-hmm.
what kind of daughter am I, that I'm more worried about my popularity than my father.
Mm.
But I was embarrassed, and it was very hard to fit in. And my first day back at school, I did have a lot of the kids who wanted to know that were curious, and I just didn't want any attention brought to me. And there were the kids that teased. I think that is an age where kids do tease you a lot and make fun of you a lot. And I do write about this in my book there, and we're very good friends to this day. Her name is Nicole. There were some 8th grade boys that were teasing me about the death of my father. And this crowd of kids started to come around, you know, and they were watching this. And Nicole, she was not even 5 foot at the time. She's Italian, beautiful Italian girl. So she's probably, you know, 4'8", 4'9". She came walking right up. And she got between me and the 8th grade boys, who are much taller than Nicole was. And she put these boys in their place.
Brave little girl.
And I remember being so in awe of her and her correct use of swear words in 7th grade. But one of the things that people, and if I can, you know, stress to your listeners, is be an advocate for these children who have lost a parent to suicide. And in a lot of ways, I think Nicole saved my life that day, because I was going through the pain and the embarrassment, and then to be teased on top of that, and I wasn't in a situation to stand up for myself
mm-hmm.
because I was going through the grief process.
Mm-hmm.
So for her to stand in and to stand up for me and to say, this isn't right, leave this person alone, I think helped ease some of my pain.
Yeah.
And didn't make me feel so isolated and so alone and so in this place of shame and embarrassment.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like a little angel.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing. I wonder if there would be a place for teaching about suicide in schools, you know, to prepare other children and have it be more of a supportive environment as opposed to maybe a traumatic situation that you experienced with these kids.
They do a lot of teen suicide prevention, which is great work. The Yellow Ribbon Organization, they're an international organization that is actually based here in Colorado. They're headquartered in Colorado. And I know they go into the schools and they do teen prevention. And it's a wonderful, wonderful program. What I have found that's missing in my research is there weren't and still aren't a lot of programs for teenagers and children who have lost a parent to suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And there are approximately 24,000 children aged 18 and under who suffer from the death of a parent to suicide each year in the United States. And that's an estimate
that's incredible.
Is probably low. So to be able to have the services there to help the children go through the grief process, and it is a unique grieving process. After my father had died, there was a grieving group for children who had lost a parent to death. And the school system did put me in this group. And although their intentions were good, in a lot of ways it was even more difficult for me because I remember sitting in this group and everybody went around in the circle and introduced themselves and they talked about their loved one or their parent who had died. And I had felt that all the other parents had died by a respectable death.
Mm-hmm.
They had died by cancer. They had died by an accident. And so when it came to me, how do you talk about a parent that died by suicide and that you had a parent who wanted to take their life? So there is a whole, in my humble opinion, there's a whole other level to that the suicide survivor has to go through and grieve through. And I did much better when I did finally find a support group when I was in my adult life through an organization called Heartbeat, which is also a national organization, but they're headquartered here in Denver. And it's a support group for suicide survivors. And it was very healing to sit in that room with other people who had lost loved ones to suicide.
Mm. Well, I was wondering where your thoughts were on education and where a focus needed to be, whether it was prevention education or just educating the public and counselors as to the need for counseling for children.
I think and what I've heard from the teen suicide groups is we're doing a really great job with the teens, that the teenagers, they don't have a problem using the word suicide. They don't have a problem talking about suicide. So we're very hopeful with this next generation that's coming up that they're able to mention the word suicide and hopefully eliminate the stigma that's around suicide. It's really more my generation, I'm in my 40s now and up, where we're still in this generation of that, you know, you don't really want to talk about suicide.
Yeah.
You don't want to ask about suicide.
Mm.
So the hope is that by getting to the children young and talking about this subject openly and honestly, that when they do reach our age, they'll still be able to be open and honest, and it won't be a taboo topic that's just swept under the rug.
Mm-hmm.
In my lifetime, death certificates were still being altered. And I do know and have heard into the 90s because of the shame.
Wow.
And
that's amazing.
So we still have that generation that we have to work through,
mm-hmm.
of the shame. But
mm-hmm.
this new generation that's coming up, it's hopeful that this won't be a taboo topic. And the more we can be open and honest about it, that's when the healing's really going to happen.
Yes, and maybe some of those statistics will start dropping.
That's our hope.
Mm-hmm. Was there anything that you really had to keep in mind writing this book, knowing it was going out to a young audience and probably quite a fragile audience?
You know, when I first wrote it, again, it was for me.
Right.
And then I was worried about that. And that's when I went to the suicide prevention organizations, because I do have two chapters that are very detailed about my father's death. He died by asphyxiation in the garage, and as I mentioned, I did find him, and I go into that experience in detail, and I was concerned, is this going to be okay for, you know, a 12, 13, 14-year-old to read? And the feedback that I got was yes, that it is all right, and yes, it is a heavy topic, but I think it is presented in my 13-year-old viewpoint of what had happened at the time and my feelings and my perspective, what was going on from my perspective. And there are, out of the 24,000 children out there, I'm sure many of them are also finding their parents who have died by suicide. So my hope is that my story can help them, and that also my story can help the general public, so they would be more sensitive to children whose parents have died, and give them the tools that they need to maybe talk to that person,
open up
to that person, be a little more sympathetic, hopefully not tease them, and give them the comfort that they need and deserve after their loved one has died.
I imagine with children these days, I mean, they grow up very quickly. So really when we're talking about 12, 13, 14 years of age, they've been exposed to quite a bit. So I imagine that for the most part, you know, that they would be able to handle what you talk about in this book.
You know, I think they would be able to. And the book talks a lot about my emotions. And with the reviews that I have gotten back, the reader reviews have said that that's what is the strength of the book, that it really is not me reminiscing about when I was 13. It really is puts you in the perspective and the viewpoint of a 13-year-old.
Mm-hmm. Very relatable.
Very relatable. And I'm so happy that the reviews have come back that way, because that really was my intention.
So are you having organizations, suicide prevention organizations, utilizing your book at this point, or is it still too new?
Yes, I do have suicide prevention organizations who are using my book. I also have grief counselors, grief therapists who are using my book, and that has been the biggest reward of all. The other day I got an email from a grief counselor who said that the timing of my book couldn't have been any better, and that she was working with a 15-year-old whose mother had died by suicide, and she thought that my book was going to be really great in helping that person, that young boy, through his healing process. And that is thrilling to me.
Yeah.
That is the whole reason I put my story out there, the whole reason I wrote this book, and if it just helps that one person, then I've achieved my goal. That's what I wanted.
Now, your appendices in the back of this book with the risk factors, the contact information for suicide prevention, I think you've also got grief counseling organizations listed there. Is that for the U.S. or is that just for Colorado?
I have for the U.S. I also have international resources, too.
Okay, great.
My book has been picked up in London and Canada,
and
so there are some international resources there for suicide prevention and therapy.
Great. Now, tell us about your other books. You have some picture books for preschool children.
I do. I have some picture books for preschoolers, but they haven't been published yet. I hope to have them published soon. But they're really more just character-building life skill books about loving yourself and knowing what to be when you grow up, honoring your strengths and your abilities, and just really to help build you up as a person. And I really wrote those more for my children. And I just thought that they would be great character buildings, because I do think it's so important to love yourself. And I also talk about that in my book, Crossing 13, when you're going through the grieving process, to honor yourself, to be kind to yourself, and to love yourself, because that's very important.
Absolutely. It sounds like a very common message with what you're putting forth. And basically, it sounds like what your mission is now at this point in your life.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that oftentimes with suicide survivors, you know, we do go through that guilty process of the self-blame and why didn't I see this and how come I couldn't have been there to help this person. And so then through that process, I personally experienced almost a self-hatred,
mm-hmm.
you know, where I wasn't good enough and why didn't I see this from my father and how come, you know, I wasn't, maybe if I was a better daughter, he would have stayed. If I was a better person and could have found him sooner, or if I could have prevented this from happening. And that really puts in a lot of negative talk, of self-talk, that you just really don't like yourself. And so I had to work through a lot of that and come to a place of being kind to myself and honoring myself and having self-love. And I think that's very important for all of us, whether you've gone through a grieving process or not.
Absolutely. And I imagine that when you look at it, that you, I mean, these are gifts that can come out of tragedy. And I think that's a great way to look at any kind of tragedy or loss or anything that can happen in our life, you know, to pull the gifts and to pull the positives out of it eventually.
I agree wholeheartedly with that. And I've always said that I do think that everything happens in our life for a reason. And I've wanted to honor my father by pulling the gifts from his death. And I think that's a great way that you termed that. And I want to honor him by loving myself, by helping others who are going through this grieving process. And I know that he's up in heaven right now smiling down at me, and he's very happy with this, because I know he would want that too.
Well, I know you're going to be making a big difference in a lot of people's lives, so we certainly support what you're doing, Carrie.
Thank you so much.
Yes.
And I really appreciate you giving me the opportunity to talk about my book, Crossing 13, Memoir of a Father's Suicide.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's mention your website.
Okay. My website is Affirm Publications. That's www.affirmpublications.com. And you can also get my book on Amazon at amazon.com or barnesandnoble.com.
So it's everywhere.
It is.
Great.
It is.
Great. Do you have on your website a list of appearances you'll be making?
I do.
Okay, good.
Yes, I do. They can go, and there's a tab that you can just click on that for appearances. And I list any radio shows I'm going to be on, book signings, speaking engagements that are coming up.
And if anyone wants to contact you, they can through email as well.
Absolutely. info@affirmpublications.com.
Excellent. Thank you so much for coming and talking with us today. This has been wonderful, Carrie.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. I really enjoyed it.
You bet. Much success and all the best to you.
Thank you.
All right, listeners, that's been Carrie Stark-Hugas. Her book, Crossing 13, Memoir of a Father's Suicide, is out now. The website is affirmpublications.com, and you can purchase Crossing 13 through Carrie's website as well as through other online booksellers, and I'm sure through your local bookseller as well. So very interesting information, a really powerful book, so please do check it out. Thank you so much for listening once again to Inside Scoop Live. I'm Juanita Watson, and until next time.